Welcome to the ProWrestling.net All Access Daily Podcast for Tuesday, October 3rd, 2017. I am Jason Powell, and coming up after the break for non-members, my full review of Tuesday's WWE SmackDown Live. WWE SmackDown Live was in Denver, Colorado at Pepsi Center on Tuesday. It was the second night in a row that they ran the same venue, with Raw being there on Monday. This was the go-home show for Sunday's WWE Hell in a Cell pay-per-view, and I thought it was a good quality go-home show. It was what I like to refer to as an Empire Strikes Back edition, in that most of the villains, the heels, were the ones getting the upper hand going into the pay-per-view. Not in all cases, but in many. In fact, Charlotte tapped out to Natalya. Kevin Owens ended up getting the better of Shane McMahon, although Shane kept getting up. And the list goes on. So it was a heel-heavy night, and I think that's smart, as it gives the babyfaces something to overcome heading into the pay-per-view. It gives you a reason to tune in if you like those babyfaces and want to see them get revenge. Before we get into running through the actual show, I do want to give you a couple of quick heads-up. On Thursday, I will be the guest on Wade Keller's Pro Wrestling Podcast at podcast1.com. And then on Tuesday, so a week from now, I will be the guest on Jim Ross's podcast, the Ross Report podcast, also at Podcast One. So be sure to check those out. I'll have more details on the site as well. I am recording late. Normally we do something on Tuesday afternoon, but it's just been a little bit hectic. Plus, I had to watch my Twins lose to the Yankees tonight. It was fun. I'm still happy the Twins got to the postseason. It was certainly not expected after last season's 100-plus loss campaign, and so I didn't have high hopes for them going into New York. It's just been a house of horrors, both stadiums for that matter, and the Yankees have a hell of a team, but a really fun season, so no complaints. And the funny thing is, I was watching SmackDown during commercial breaks. There's so many of them, I finished long before the baseball game ended. And so I did, you know, was kind of watching in bits and pieces and fast-forwarding through some video packages. Hopefully I didn't miss anything all that important, but it seems like I got all the major stuff. I'll be using Jake Barnett's report that he does every Tuesday night live as the show is airing on ProWrestling.net as my outline. You're welcome to do the same if you want to follow along. They did open things up with another moment of silence. It was Vince McMahon and Shane McMahon out there, along with the SmackDown crew this time. And, of course, this was for the shootings that took place in Las Vegas. And so WWE, classy on Monday, kind of a repeat of things on Tuesday. Classy gesture on their part. Then they got into the show. They kind of opened things up with a video that recapped Jinder Mahal and Shinsuke Nakamura's recent feud. And then Renee Young interviewed Shinsuke in the ring. And he made his entrance, and he really didn't get a chance to say a whole lot when it came to the things that Jinder has been saying about him and whether they cross the line. He used the old "sticks and stones may break my bones, but words will never hurt me." And he also talked about the easiest thing to fear is the unknown, and Jinder would know that at TLC when he beats him and takes his championship. He was interrupted by the Singh brothers, so you can tell they didn't want to leave Nakamura out there too long on the mic. And they ended up taunting him. Mahal ended up sneaking up from behind and hit Nakamura and got the better of him briefly because Shinsuke ended up coming back and was setting up for his finisher in the corner, but the Singh brothers grabbed both of his legs, and Mahal actually got the last laugh, hitting his finisher on Shinsuke, which, again, I find to be a smart move heading into the pay-per-view. Decent opening segment. WWE Championship match does not feel like the biggest match on this show. I would say that is Shane McMahon and Kevin Owens. It's been positioned that way. I don't even know if it feels like the second biggest. That's kind of the issue right now with Jinder as champion, I should say. Nakamura, this whole feud just really hasn't caught fire yet. They ended up teasing us with a women's tag match before going to a commercial break. When they came back, we got a video for the breast cancer charity that they work with, and then it was time for that women's match. And it was Natalya and Carmella defeating Becky Lynch and Charlotte in 7:33. I like that they're not afraid. They're teasing now. Not teasing, but just showing you that there's a little bit of apprehension when it comes to Natalya because of the fact that Carmella has the Money in the Bank briefcase, and they did show us a backstage interview between the two of them before the match, and she talked about how her dog, James Ellsworth, better not get involved in the match, and also kind of indicated there better not be any funny business, I think referring to Money in the Bank. The match itself, as I said, was the heels going over. You had Ellsworth getting involved. Carmella hit Becky with the briefcase at ringside. This served as a distraction for Charlotte, who turned and looked at that. I don't know if the idea was that she heard the thud, because I don't know, it wasn't playing on the big screen, because that was like, all right, maybe that's the way they're trying to frame this. So I actually did a quick rewind to see. No, she just turned around, and because of that, she ended up taking a clothesline, and Natalya applied the sharpshooter for the win. I can't, you know, I mean, again, it's the heel getting the better of the babyface. I can't really say this one moved me in terms of being more interested in the women's championship match on Sunday. Didn't really hurt my interest either. Usually it's weird when WWE does something like this. On the go-home show, it usually means the person who lost is actually going to win on Sunday. We'll see if they follow through with that in the women's championship match, but Natalya getting the win for her team here. We ended up with a video package then that recapped the Shane McMahon and Kevin Owens feud. They went to a commercial, and when they came back, we ended up with Bobby Roode defeating Mike Kanellis in just under 2 minutes. No Maria, of course. She is pregnant, which they did acknowledge on the show now, saying that I think she's due in April, I believe they said. And no entrance for Mike Kanellis either. I mean, it was so much about him and Maria, that whole entrance. I hope they repackage him. I mean, I know it's been a rocky start. But I'd like to see, he's a talented guy. I think they can do more with him than they currently are. But I understand, like, right now, it's just like, well, they had plans for those two, and now she's out with the pregnancy, and so he's just kind of left out there on his own, and they really don't have a plan in place for him. But I would hope that he's not going to be, you know, just in this mode forever. But we'll see. This was Roode pinning him with the glorious DDT for the win. Dolph Ziggler came out afterward, did not have a special entrance to start anyway, and just put over the big production that Bobby Roode has for his entrance, ended up deciding to go back and doing his own entrance. There was a police siren that played. Then he had a drum that he held and played poorly as he was walking to the ring. He had his own streamers, and he had an air horn, and he actually took the air horn and put it in, you know, over the mic, and then hit the air horn again. The air horn was completely obnoxious, but, I mean, hey, he's a heel. Okay, that's what he's going for. And then he screamed at the crowd and asked if everyone liked him now. And they went back and forth verbally in the ring for a little bit, and he ended up with Roode telling him that he wanted to answer a question that that Ziggler brought up. He told him that his entrance was horrible and that he was doing it all wrong. And then he did his own taunt and ended up striking the pose and did the glorious bit in his music hit. So Roode kind of got the last word here. This Ziggler, I mean, the air horn was completely obnoxious, but I did, at least, you know, the whole wrestler entrance thing that he's been doing, it's just been kind of eye-rolling material. Hasn't done anything for me. Where this, you know, at least he, it seems like he's focused in now on Roode, so he doesn't need to go out there and impersonate others. And but he did promise later in the show that he had some big entrance planned for Sunday, so we'll see what that entails. Coming out of a commercial break, we ended up with the Usos coming out. The idea was that they were going to read the New Day their rights. I'm like, what? And there was really none of that. They just talked about how the Hell in a Cell is going to be a lot like the Uso Penitentiary. And I thought they delivered a good promo. There's nothing really heelish about what they say. It's granted, it's directed at baby faces, but they're not out there really seeking heat. And it kind of, you know, made me think that New Day, I mean, this has been going on for a while now. They're kind of making it seem like this might be the last match between these teams, just in the video. It's nothing they've really talked about in the promos that I caught anyway. But New Day are really good opponents for them, because they can go out there, the Usos, and cut these promos that make them seem cool. I mean, that's how they come off, as just cool guys cutting these promos. But New Day is so over that, you know, when they're directed at New Day and then New Day comes out and does their thing, the Usos don't really get cheered. So if they were working with another team, I would be worrying more that, man, the Usos might start to get cheered in all this. And it could happen down the road, but right now I think as long as they're working with New Day, they're okay. And this was one where they just kind of The baby face has got the last word here for the Usos long promo, and it was your kind of basic New Day stuff with Big E closing it out by leading the crowd in New Day Rocks chants. This was another one. I can't say it really moved me one way or another regarding the match of the pay-per-view, but hey, it was one that I was excited about when they announced it for Hell in a Cell, and when they added the stipulation that it is inside Hell in a Cell, and so they didn't make me lose any interest here. It was a decent verbal exchange. They went backstage, and Jinder Mahal showed the video from earlier in the night and said that Shinsuke had underestimated his intelligence. It only took a simple distraction to take down the rock star. And on Sunday, the outcome would be the same. He'd beat the rock star and leave with the WWE Championship again. Pretty basic stuff here. They went to a commercial, and when they came back, Ty Dillinger did not get a televised entrance. Baron Corbin did for their match, and it was Ty Dillinger defeating Baron Corbin in just under 6 minutes. I did not expect this, and I don't know what to make of it. All this led to, he ended up being reversed into a roll-up off of a suplex attempt and being pinned, and he got up claiming it was two. The announcers really didn't play that up at all, but it led to AJ Styles coming out and basically lecturing Baron Corbin, saying that he squandered away another opportunity, and if he'd worked harder, he might have beaten John Cena at SummerSlam or successfully cashed in his briefcase or beaten Ty Dillinger here. It was just kind of running down Corbin, and I thought, as much as I like AJ Styles, I just kind of thought he came off a little bit preachy almost, and none of this left me looking forward. This is the one program that I can think of right now at the top of my head. Maybe I'll change my mind as we work our way through this show. That kind of made me, it moved me in a negative way, I guess, toward, when it comes to their match on Sunday. I'm looking forward to Styles and Corbin. I want to see what kind of a match Styles can get out of him. But I can't say that this match left me more excited about it. It was just kind of like, Corbin loses to Ty Dillinger. My guess is that Corbin is going to win the championship, and I hope he does because it gets AJ back into, away from the secondary title eventually, sooner rather than later. He may get a rematch or whatever. And then ideally he moves back into world title contention, regardless of who's champion. And on the other side, you have Dillinger, who just beat Corbin, and so maybe he enters the picture, or maybe Corbin just comes back and, dominates him in his first match as U.S. champion or something. There's different ways they can do it. But that, that was the one thing I took from this, is assuming that Corbin is going to come out on top on Sunday. But I can't say that, again, this just didn't make me look forward to the match more. In fact, maybe even a little bit less. Then it was time for a repeat of what they did with the cancer survivors on Raw with the breast cancer charity that they work with. Dana Warrior was out again. They had all the SmackDown babyfaces and heels standing in the ring. They had three breast cancer survivors. Dana presented them with title belts and announced their names, and then they shook the ropes. Complete replay of what they did on Raw with three different women and the Raw Women's Division. Then we had Randy Orton, the recap of him attacking Aiden English and Rusev last week as part of the Rusev Day celebration, giving them both RKOs. Rusev was in the ring, and he said he was supposed to. It was supposed to be a happy day until Orton ruined it, and he said that it's okay. There's going to be many more happy Rusev days to come, like when he beats Randy on Sunday, and his family is embarrassed to even look at him. This led to the match that was Randy Orton defeating Aiden English in 248. English was out there with Rusev this whole time. Rusev remained at ringside. It was a cool kind of pop-up into a RKO finish from Randy Orton. I thought he had a great smirk afterward, and crowd really into that, just seeing that that cool RKO. And then Randy posed with his back to Rusev, and Rusev slowly started thinking about getting in the ring to attack him when Orton spun around and struck the Viper's pose, and that made Rusev back up. Rusev did smile a little bit, but he ended up leaving. This was fine. It didn't, another one that didn't, just move me in any way when it came to their match, but the crowd was pleased, but with the Orton finish, with the cool RKO, and it was, again, just fine. From there, they went backstage where Sami Zayn was trying to talk to Shane McMahon, who was saying that he was telling him that Kevin Owens had snapped, and he thinks that Shane thinks he's going to go out there and get his revenge, and be done with Kevin Owens, but he doesn't know what he's getting himself into. Shane ended up getting a little defensive, saying that at the pay-per-view, Owens was going to be locked in the cell with him, not the other way around. And he said he appreciated Sammy's concern, but told him to take care of himself and he'd do the same. And Sammy was kind of left like, okay, what's going on with Sammy here? I mean, it seems so weird to think, like, is there a heel turn coming with Sami Zayn? It'd be kind of odd if that's the direction they're going in. I guess it's just he's not a guy you think about playing that role. But the way Shane kind of was blowing him off, and this wasn't like hyped up Sammy that we've seen, the neurotic Sammy at all. So that was good. It just kind of seemed like he was trying to give Shane a piece of advice about this. And maybe nothing comes of it. But the fact that we ended up finding out, we'll just get to it now. Momentarily coming out of the commercial break, Shane McMahon came out, called out Kevin Owens. Owens didn't show up and said that's what he thought. He said Owens was a coward, but he'd have nowhere to run on Sunday. He said he ran from him last week, and he refused to show up the week before. And he said he would beat some humility into him on Sunday and render him unrecognizable. And then he said he was making the match a Falls Count Anywhere match because he didn't want any barriers in the way of his revenge. Yes, really, a Hell in a Cell match that is also a Falls Count Anywhere match. So they're telling you that this isn't staying inside the Hell in a Cell structure. I get what they're going for. I just wish the setup had been a little better, like for the first time ever, the door is going to remain unlocked or something. And maybe they'll do that on Sunday. They just didn't really explain it well. But I don't like that, hey, this is supposed to be, WWE's already ruined the cage match, and really all pro wrestling has, just by doing too many swerves and gimmicks and all sorts of people getting inside of it. Hell in a Cell was supposed to be the new cage match, essentially. Well, I don't think it was ever created to be that, but that's what it became, in a way. It felt like the cage match is useless. Hell in a Cell is now how you end the feud in WWE in a major way. And then they started doing the same things with Hell in a Cell. Interference and everything, like outside interference, people getting in the cell and all of that. And I know, hey, there's been some fun moments where people get outside the structure and they go up on top of it and everything else. And maybe that's what they're setting up. I think they could have just explained this, said, we're not going to lock, the door's not going to be locked. For the first time ever, we're leaving it unlocked because, they want to battle all around the, however you want to explain it. Shane's answer, it didn't really make a whole lot of sense to me, or his explanation, I should say. And then when he started, just the idea that he's thinking about making the match, or he said that he was making the match a Falls Count Anywhere, I'm like, wait a minute, you're suspended. From the storyline standpoint, unless, am I forgetting Vince McMahon, putting him back in charge as the commissioner of SmackDown? I don't think so. He's technically suspended. He's a McMahon. I get that. But from a storyline standpoint, that part didn't make a whole lot of sense. Well, Owen showed up and walked in through the stands. And he talked about how terrible Shane's music is and called himself the real money. Shane said he wasn't sure if Kevin understood the concept of face-to-face and demanded he come to the ring. Owen said he was there to please, but upon second thought, he'd had enough of Denver already. And he said he would see Shane on Sunday. And then he walked into the concourse. You couldn't see him anymore. He was off camera. Shane said that, I knew he was a coward. And he said that if he's not going to come to the ring, I'll take the fight to him. And so Shane goes into the crowd and follows into the area where Kevin Owens was in the concourse, attacks Owens. Owens comes back, powerbombs him through a merch table. And then Owens comes back into the arena, walking out of the concourse into the lower bowl of the arena. And then he took a mic as he got to ringside and asked the crowd if they thought Shane McMahon was having a rough night, and said it was nothing compared to what was going to happen on Sunday. And Owen said he agreed with Shane, though, about Falls Count Anywhere, because he wanted to be able to beat him up in the ring, out of the ring, in the cell, and outside. I'm like, okay, yeah. There just needed to be a little bit better explanation. Owens, the logic was kind of there. I just wish there would have been a better setup for it. Owens talked about all the things he's going to do to Shane, including throwing him off the top of the Hell in a Cell structure, and said there would be no getting back up at that point. Shane started making his way back to the ring. As he's walking down the rings or the steps through the crowd, all of a sudden some woman stands up and decides now's the time to twerk. So Shane's walking past her, and she sticks her ass out and starts to, she tried to twerk. I wouldn't say she was very successful in her twerking. I'm not a twerking connoisseur or anything, but I've seen better. And in this case, you got to give her credit, though, because I mean, it's definitely been all over the internet already. It was a pretty comical moment, so you had to kind of chuckle at it. Even if she wasn't the world's greatest twerker, I got a laugh out of it. But Shane gets down to the ring, and they fight again. And he threw some punches at Owens, but Owens ended up super kicking him. Owens was about to leave, but he got back in the ring. Shane got back to his feet, and Owens headbutted him, just as he had done to Vince McMahon. No blood here, though. He ended up performing his pop-up powerbomb finisher on Shane as the refs were pleading with him to go to the back. And Kevin started to leave, but then Shane looked up and pointed at him as Owens was then walking to the back to close the show. So I guess the idea is that no matter what Kevin Owens does to Super Shane is still going to keep fighting. He's a McMahon, damn it. He's going to keep fighting back no matter what. And hey, this was a good story. They've done a really nice job of building this up. You know, I think the peak of it obviously was Kevin Owens headbutting Vince McMahon. It's awfully hard to top, you know, Vince McMahon taking a headbutt and bleeding. And, you know, people have, I really question Vince taking that move. But as far as just putting that aside, and as far as being a big angle, it certainly succeeded in that. It was a big deal. And they haven't been able to top that. But I really like the go-home angle between these two. This is one I'm really looking forward to. You know, Kevin Owens, I think, did a wonderful job on the mic throughout the build of this match. It was the thing I've said. You know, I was really looking forward to that when there started being rumors of these two fighting one another at Hell in a Cell or having this Hell in a Cell match, was that you just had to assume that Kevin Owens was going to handle the bulk of the mic work, and it wasn't going to be the face of America Kevin Owens, or getting, as Sami Zayn calls it, you know, the snapped version of Kevin Owens. And that's, you know, the best version of Kevin Owens as far as I'm concerned. And he really lived up to expectations with his mic work. And I think they have a match that a lot of people are looking forward to now with Shane McMahon and Kevin Owens, Hell in a Cell, Falls Count Anywhere Hell in a Cell match. So, you know, and that can be fun. You know, they're going to brawl all over the place. And, I'm guessing it's probably the setup for some big Shane McMahon stunt, which I don't know that I really need to see it, but hey, we'll see. I mean, it's obviously got to play out. We'll see if it actually happens that way or not. I just wish there had been a little bit better explanation as to why this isn't just inside Hell in a Cell. You know, Shane keeps calling Kevin Owens a coward, but then he makes it a Falls Count Anywhere match, so technically Owens could just run away if he wanted to. So a little issue with that, but overall, I'm really looking forward to the match on Sunday and the overall show. I think it should be a fun evening with a pretty good lineup there. I'm looking forward to the tag title match that they're having for the inside Hell in a Cell as well. Mahal and Nakamura, a little bit. U.S. Championship should be decent. I'm kind of curious to see what kind of match AJ and Corbin have together. Women's Championship match should be entertaining, and so I think it's going to be a good show overall. And you can join me for live coverage, of course, on Sunday evening, beginning with the needlessly long one-hour kickoff show. And then coming out of the show, Jake Barnett and I will get together for the member-exclusive audio review of WWE Hell in a Cell. If you're interested in membership to the ad-free version of ProWrestling.net, all you have to do is visit our main page at ProWrestling.net, click into the sign-up area, three different pricing options available, and again, everything becomes ad-free, and you get to hear all of our audio content that we've done through our nearly 10-year history. So if there's an interview you want to hear from the past, or maybe you're watching a Raw or a pay-per-view from the past on the network and you're kind of curious to know what people had to say about it, well, you can find out because it's all there available once you sign up for .NET membership. Our entire history, again, of audio, and we have a ton of audio each week, including coming up on Wednesday morning, I'll be talking with Blake Riley of the Blake and Sal Show. He's going to join me for the .NET Weekly audio show, and we will spend a good portion of that show previewing the WWE pay-per-view event, the Hell in a Cell show. So I'm looking forward to that. The members hear that show usually sometime Wednesday, Thursday, or Friday. This week it'll be out Wednesday for everybody. And my Q&A audio show went out earlier today. My Raw audio review is available, and the list goes on and on. All the major television shows and pay-per-view events covered in audio form. And again, Hell in a Cell included, coming up on Sunday night with Jake Barnett. Speaking of Jake, you will be hearing Will Pruitt and Jake Barnett coming up on Thursday and Friday, the return of the Pretentious Wrestling Podcast here on PWAudio.net on the All Access side of things. And later on today, by the time most of you hear this, again, I'm recording this late Tuesday night, you're going to hear John Moore's 205 Live audio review. That will be Wednesday's All Access Daily Podcast. Take a moment, subscribe to our daily podcast, rate and review us on iTunes, anywhere that takes a review. That really helps spread the word about the site, and we really appreciate it. Follow the brand on Twitter, @ProWrestlingNet, and I will talk to you again very soon. Take care.